Thank you very much. Good morning. This is very much a preliminary set of results. The study is still continuing, so you're seeing the results from last year. This is Australia, down under, everything is opposite. So summer is winter, winter is summer. For a land that's a desert mainly, I am actually working well in the south there with the green arrow. So it's actually coastal, temperate climate, quite mild, around 27 inches of rain, and currently mostly sheep and beef grazing, but cropping is moving south into this area as climate change starts to put pressure on the semi-arid cropping areas to the north. So we have started to look at what happens as they convert to cropping in this area. So the most of the soils have been under a lovely high fertility clover and perennial ryegrass pasture for many years. It's built up large amounts of organic matter and soil nitrogen. So when we convert to cropping, typically we don't even need nitrogen fertilizer, but we do tend to find relatively large emissions. A previous study found 3 kilograms per hectare per year of nitrous oxide nitrogen coming off. This is a relatively large amount for Australia, so we wanted to try and tackle these emissions. It was our worst case scenario for the area, and so we chose a couple of fairly traditional type things to look at. Nitrification inhibitor, my Texas friends have given me some translation tips. This is diacyandiamide. It sounds terrible, but it's a very old-fashioned, relatively benign inhibitor that is usually put on as a coating of over urea granules to try and reduce ammonium leaching. So, nitrate leaching, because it holds the nitrogen in the ammonia form, basically by sending the microbes to sleep. So, that was the first thing that we tried. We didn't need fertilizer, so we actually turned it into a solution and sprayed it directly on the soil surface, put it on at sowing and later in the season. The other thing we tried was reduced tillage. So instead of using some heavy discs, we tried direct drilling after killing out the pasture. So that gave us 4 treatments, the 2 types of tillage, and then also spraying on the inhibitor. So we had 3 replicate blocks across our treatment and giving us 12 plots. And then there was 1 automatic nitrous oxide chamber on every plot. So this is, I'm going to give you some more details on the chambers because this is an unusual high precision system. Very large chambers we were able to employ in the system for nitrous oxide work, 0.8 by 0.8 metres. But because they're basically a miniature greenhouse when they close, we moved the chambers to a second base fairly regularly to try and just even out the effects on the crop growth. So the plants, everything happens as normal, and then we put the chambers on and off, so there'll be plants growing in those chambers. We have mixing fans in the chambers and pressure vents because the temperature tends to rise once they close. We collect a huge amount of data off these chambers, which creates its own issues, but so these chambers will be closing 16 times a day. We've got very rapid cycling with a closure time of 30 minutes, and then we also use overrides. So if it happens to rain or if the temperature gets too hot in the chambers, they will pop open. We're not too concerned about losing data because there's plenty of it. The wonderful people at Campbell Scientific designed this system, so it's a tunable diode laser, which you normally see in the eddy covariant systems, hooked up to an automatically switching manifold, so we're able to actually pump a different nitrous oxide sample through it every 30 seconds and come up with some wonderful results. If you want to hear more about the statistics and the subdaily data, I'm presenting tomorrow in session 255. But with this presentation, I'm just going to leap straight into daily and results. So I've averaged up everything into gram per hectare per day off a treatment. So we started out beautifully, I have to say, and we went into sowing and then had an excellent effect of cultivation. You see there in the blue and the red, and our two cultivated treatments. About 2 weeks of increased nitrous oxide emissions from those treatments after sowing. No real effect of the inhibitor, which went on at the same time. But later in that season, you see it's June, but actually this is early winter for us. And in our case, it was fairly dry. And you can see there the red and the yellow are no inhibitor. And there we're getting about half the emissions when we put the inhibitor on in the blue and the green there. So it's looking really good. Check out our scale. Not really a lot happening around the five or so grams per hectare per day coming off these emissions. And you see something start to happen off to the side as it wets up and we get our main winter rain. It was around an average year with a relatively wet winter. And I'm highlighting my change in scale here as we got into some really wet soil conditions. So as it wetted up in winter, we started to really blow out our emissions, and we're getting up to a kilo per day off these, in this case, conventional cultivation with inhibitor. And it just started to really do nasty things to my nice treatments. And the misery continued. So this, now you're seeing the entire year. So we have that first burst of emissions that you saw in early winter, followed by a second massive burst as we started to dry out a little bit in the spring. And now I'm going to overlay the waterfield pore space. This is the average across all the treatments. And you can see what's happening there. We wet it up as we go into midwinter, and then August was actually decile 10 rainfall. So these are relatively wet soils. There's a very heavy clay subsoil. So we have a perched water table, and the profile is wetting up. So in this period here where you see the flat line, it's actually the theta probes giving up as we hit full soil saturation. And we had water sitting on the surface for nearly a month, I think. So the plants are actually drowning. And you see emissions stop beautifully here. Everything ground to a halt. And it's actually that we are now probably in full denitrification and going right through to dinitrogen. So with a little bit of oxygen in our system, we're getting some huge interference with what's going on, and a huge amount of nitrous oxide. And you can see yellow tending to win the race there, which was the direct drill treatment. And if you put it together with cumulative emissions, I emphasise that this is preliminary. So we're still running the statistics on this. I'm not sure if this is a significant difference or not, but the main message is that we had around 35 kilos of nitrous oxide nitrogen coming off that system, no matter what we did to it. And possibly the most off direct drill, which wasn't supposed to happen. it's a little bit sad. well, I'm pretty much breaking world records here with my emissions instead of controlling them. So I even managed to get more emissions than the guys working up in the tropics with the sugar cane. So it's a bit sad. Trying to interpret now what's happened. So I've gone to the classics with the hole in the pipe model, and to just try and get my head around what's happening here. Obviously, there's a huge amount of nitrogen in the system, around 4%. Nitrogen, an average of 77 kilos of nitrogen as nitrate per hectare just in our top 10 centimetres or 4 inches. So that was an average over the year. It actually went up to around 200 kilos and then dropped away as we went into leaching. So a massive amount of nitrogen in the system, and an acid soil, which also tends to give you more emissions. And then waterfield pore space, 140 of those days were in the zone for 60 to 79% waterfield pore space, thanks to our perched water table and our relatively wet year. So I think I pretty much hit every type of thing that's going to increase my emissions, and didn't do too well on my mitigation. So actually, when you add up how much nitrous oxide I had versus how much nitrate alone I had running around in that system, still only around the 0.1% of nitrogen coming off as nitrous oxide. So actually I would say my losses were in scale. It wasn't, and it's Well, obviously, trying to reduce the cycling through my treatments wasn't working. So the question is, what can we do about it? And I think that trying to control my nitrogen cycling is obviously a kind of a waste of time in this system. And what I should be trying to do is trying to modify the drainage, because it's with the perch water table, I think if I could get the system to spend less time at that sort of optimum water-filled pore space, that might be have my best effect. And we've actually had some quite nice indication results of some manual chamber work. So there is actually a way of doing that in these systems. They have something called a raised bed, which is looks like a 1 meter wide cotton bed, and that helps shed the water off the system. So what we're hoping to do in the next study is actually compare emissions from the flat ground versus the raised bed, and we'll be trying to follow through also the effect of the disturbance on the leaching and all the sideline effects, because it's not much use if we just move the emissions off to the drainways and end up with lots of indirect emissions rather than direct. So that's my study. I think we probably have lots of time for questions if you want to ask them.
2 minutes for a question.
Dahlia.
Well, first of all, I just want to check the unit. You said 0.42% as a nitrate or to
the
nitrogen?
The this one?
No, back.
Oh, 0.42% nitrogen, total nitrogen. That's just total nitrogen in my very top soil. Soil was around 4% carbon.
0.4%, the top 10 centimetres, that will be transferring to 2,000 kilograms.
Sorry, there's a change there. That the top one is total nitrogen, the bottom one is just nitrate nitrogen. So
okay.
I'm just trying to capture an idea of what's happening in the system. Yeah, you're right, Deli. Sorry about that.
Yeah. You have data for the mineral nitrogen dynamics, like nitrate ammonia.
Yes,
that
I do. No, it doesn't. But we had a massive increase in both nitrate and ammonia in the early part of the season, and then it started to disappear, probably due to immobilisation. And those actually, the large emissions were when the soil nitrogen had dropped away again. I say drop, but still, they're, you know, you're looking at 50 kilograms of nitrogen sitting around.
So the nitrogen didn't work.
Oh, yeah. Well, Deli's asking about the inhibitor when it wasn't working. So first of all, I can tell you when it was working, soils were relatively dry for the system, still moist but nice and aerobic. So I think we were basically looking that when the system is mainly in nitrification, yes, you can see a nice effect. And yes, we did pick it up in the soil ammonia, but it wasn't. I think there was so much background nitrate that when it was mostly in denitrification, then that it wasn't. We're just not seeing it translate through to the nitrous oxide. Thank you.
Thank you very much.